Epstein Memorial Library, and you're listening to Freeform Radio 91.5 FM WMFO Medford.
WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 19th of June, 2019. My apologies for the delay. I have a programming note. The grand hour is going to be moving to 5 a.m. starting the 3rd of July. That would be 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. starting the day before Independence Day. But this morning I'm going to celebrate what the calendar here says Emancipation Day, or what's known in Texas as Juneteenth. I'm going to play a couple of episodes of Destination Freedom. The first one is episode 97, entitled Kansas City Phone Call. Destination Freedom was written, created and written by Richard Durham for the Detroit, I didn't even write that in my notes, the Detroit radio station, and featured an all African American cast, ensemble, and writer. He was a freelancer. He wasn't really part of the radio station. So I'll go ahead and start. This is the Kansas City phone call. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. In the past decade, the soaring popularity of the swoon crooner has been one of the most spectacular phenomenon in popular music circles. Chicago's contribution to the ranks of these silken-voiced balladeers is the master pianist and arranger Nat King Cole, one of the nationally famous King Cole Trio. In a chapter entitled Kansas City Phone Call, we bring you the Cole story.
Hello? Marge? Is it you, Marge? Oh, I thought you were Marge. Well, can I talk to Marge? 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 Sure, this is me, Marge. Don't I sound like myself? Well, maybe I don't. I got a reason for sounding different. We've got another member for our fan club. Yeah. Who? George Stoker. Yes, he did, Marge. Yes, he did. Oh, he put up a struggle, but I had some help. Guess who from? King Cole himself. Well, you know how George felt about our fan club and the King Cole Trio. He couldn't stand us or them. Well, I'd about given up getting George in the club. My last chance was to get him to take me to the auditorium to hear King Cole in person. Well, after we got downtown, we went into a drugstore. We sat down in a booth near the jukebox. It had 6 King Cole records on it. No, the jukebox. And Marge, George just sat there like a sack of wheat. I asked him to play number 7. Yeah. Well, he wouldn't, so I reached over and plugged number 7 myself. Good to you, or something like that. Naturally, I just sat back and soaked it all in. You know how he makes those words sound, so.
Diamond ring.
Oh, Marge, you know.
Everything. What makes me treat you the way that I do? Ain't I good?
I can see George doesn't want to take me to any dance where King Cole's playing. And he starts asking me all about him. Well, I was ready for him. I'd been reading about King Cole, about the time he lived in Chicago when he was just another tough boy on 39th Street, leading a gang against another gang. Yeah, Marge. How this little skinny guy with a lot of nerve once led his gang across the street toward a bigger gang of West Side boys. And about the fight that started. Well, while the kids were fighting, the neighborhood policeman came to break it up, the way he'd done many times before. Only this time, he goes home with Nat to have a few words with his mother.
He's not a bad kid, Mrs. Cole, but he's nervy, kind of restless. He likes to get out into the streets. Isn't there anything you and the Reverend Coles can do to keep him busy?
Well, all he'll do when he's in is bang on the piano. You know how much noise that makes. The neighbors complain.
Well, then, why don't you give him music lessons? Maybe he'll learn how to play good. Won't disturb nobody.
Well, I'll see.
And that's when it started, Marge. Nat's mother decided to let him study piano. And the very next day, she took him to Mr. Honeywell's private music school.
Come right in, Mrs. Cole. Come right in. Is this the young man you want me to teach?
This is Nathaniel.
And can he play the piano at all?
He just bangs the keys, can't read a note.
Well, I'm afraid I must listen to him play first, Mrs. Cole. You see, I only take students who have a marked ability.
Nat?
Where's the piano?
The piano was in the next room. Nat and Mr. Honeywell went in, and his mother just sat there, hoping against hope, because all she could hear was Nat playing the noisy music that made the neighbors complain. On and on he played. Well, when they came out...
Mrs. Cole.
Yes?
If this is your idea of a joke, it's unbecoming to a minister's wife.
What joke?
I mean, Nathaniel plays the piano better than I do. You must have known that.
Well, sure, I've heard him, but it never sounded like much to me.
He's playing his own kind of jazz. The boy has a rich sense of harmony and melody. All I can do is teach him to read notes. That's all he needs.
Yeah, that's what I told George, Marge. No, he still wouldn't warm up. Not even when I got another nickel and put it in the jukebox on number 8. You know that one. And can you imagine? George just sat there like a rock, wasn't moved at all, and kept asking me what I saw in this guy's stuff. He said that as a singer, Nat ought to be a good baseball player. Well, that was my cue, Marge. I knew Nat had been a shortstop on a championship team. He could catch, too. All he liked to do was to practice piano and play baseball with the gang. Took him a long time to decide whether to be a baseball player or a piano player.
Give this one, Nat. High fly. Hey, good catch. Good catch. One more coming.
No, that's enough. It's getting dark. Let's get out of here.
Huh? Sure, Nat. Where you want to go?
Earl Hines playing up at the Savoy.
Yeah, but some scouts from the AAA League coming over to see us play. We ought to get him more practice.
Yeah, but man, Earl Hines, the way he plays that piano...
Hey, look, Nat, you got to make up your mind. You intend sticking a baseball or that piano?
I don't know. Tell you what, let's just knock off this once and go hear Hines, huh?
And imagine, Marge, like I'm telling George, off he'd go to the Savoy where this Earl Hines was playing. The gang would stand along the walls in their baseball suits and listen. Well, Marge, you know Earl Hines. He played the piano like it's a trumpet. And when Cole walked away, he could still hear it echoing up and down the street. He never could get those notes out of his head.
Say, Sinette, where you go?
Huh?
Wake up, watch out!
Hey, if you want to commit suicide, do it with a pistol, buddy.
Hey, Matt, what's the matter with you? Now the engine, you've been hit. Wake up!
I was thinking about me leading a band.
Yeah?
Like Earl Hines. Playing that piano the way he plays it.
You mean you want to quit baseball playing?
Been thinking about it. Sax, what'll the gang think of me being a band leader?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you make a living doing that?
All you gotta do is find somebody to play for.
Yeah. Hey, and that, come on up and see my old man. He's in the Elks. He was telling me about some Elks ball they're giving them on that. They'll need music. Maybe the kind we can play. Come on.
When we say ball, we don't mean baseball, kids. Not baseball.
Well, yeah, but Nat's been taking lessons. He can play the way they do on records. Y'all listen, Dad.
Hey, it's not music for dancing we're after. It's dancing music. Does he play dancing music?
They can dance by this.
Oh, go on, Dad. Hire him. Go on.
Well, I'd have to contact the lodge. They wanted a real musician.
Well, he's real. Go on, call him.
Well, all right. Hello, Central. Give me Vincent's 8,000. I hope you boys know what you're talking about. Yeah, hello. Elks Lodge? Yeah, say, Joe, we're all set on music for tomorrow night. Yeah, well, my kid found what we need. Oh, sure, he's very inexpensive. Sure. The musician's name's Cole. Nathaniel Cole. His band? Well, he's sort of alone. Oh, I see. Gotta have at least two more, huh? Well, I guess...
Tell him we got him. Tell him we're all set, Paul.
All right. Joe, he's set. Sure. Okay, thanks. What do you intend getting the other musicians?
Well, I always play a little bit.
You call that howling on the saxophone playing?
It goes good with the piano.
Sure, and we can get up a drummer by tomorrow night. Somebody in the gang can beat the drum, huh?
So it's the gang again, huh? But now listen.
Now, please, Dad, let us go on. Just for tomorrow night.
Yeah, the Elks invited half the neighborhood out tomorrow night.
They won't regret it.
Yeah, Mark. Nat Cole played his first dance date. A real success, too. Nobody regretted it. Especially Nat and the gang. Next date, Sax's old man showed up at the baseball diamond.
The lodge fellas want to promote me. Best ball in 10 years. I just came out to tell you fellas to be ready for tonight. The promoters over at the Warwick heard you play too, and they want you tonight. They suggested that I act as manager since I discovered you. Now, come on. You can never tell where this will lead you. Come on.
And that's what I told George, Marge. There I sit in the drugstore telling him about what I'd read in these music magazines, see? About Nat Cole always sticking to the piano. Never singing, just sticking to the piano. Well, he was playing piano every day and arranging music that sounded like Earl Hines' band, only younger. He had a band full of teenagers. And when he finished school, a promoter spied him.
There's a show here called Shuffle Along. Ever hear of it?
It's some kind of musical.
Exactly, uh-huh. Kid.
Yeah.
Everybody here in Chicago says you're the hottest pianist since Art Tatum. Is that right?
Well, people in Chicago have sure been kind to me.
So my agency's noticed. Now, I've got a deal for you that's surefire.
Yeah?
I want you to bring your band along with the show.
Well, where to?
Oh, well, first we'll tour around Illinois, upstate, downstate, and we'll hit the South.
South, huh?
Oh, won't be any trouble. Everything's all arranged. Hey, kid, you're on your way to glory. Yes, sir, Nat Cole's teenage band's going to become the biggest moneymaker in the country. Just stick with me, kid. Just stick with me.
And, Marge, I told George how Cole stuck with the promoter all the way to Alabama, to Georgia, and down into Mississippi. And each time they played, he'd ask about the pay.
We only took in a sorry 65 in Tuckaloo, and in Alcorn, we barely made a buck. It looks sad, kid, but keep playing. Trouble is, nobody ever heard of the Nat Cole band down here. Your style of music's like something from a foreign.
He kept playing, Marge. In Meridian and Raymond, this little teenage band kept playing jazz they'd learned in Chicago. And at the end of the road trip, the promoter checked the receipts.
90, 92, 300, 6, 20, 30, 40. 140 is what we've got.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, no. What can we do with $140?
That just about pays our carfare back home.
Well, at least that's something.
Kids, I'm sorry. There's been some slight mistake.
Well, how do you mean?
You see, this $140's got to go to pay for the use of the halls in Meridian.
Well,
oh, no.
What about the carfare?
Oh, that. Well, you boys are young. Exercise never hurt growing musicians. If you can't hitchhike back to Chicago, try walking.
Well, Marge, they pawned their instruments and got on a bus and headed back home to Chicago. Just a gang of kids who wanted to play a kind of music nobody wanted to listen to. When they got out in Chicago, Nat Cole was still dreaming of building a big band. He was still a nervy kid.
Say, look here what it says in the papers about California, you guys. Huh? California's waiting for good, solid bands.
Yeah, some guy said that about the South.
Oh, this is different. Look, if we can get out to California by summer, we're sure to get booked.
Oh, I don't know.
We built a band from high school up. If we can stick together for just another 2-3 years, we're in. Who's willing?
They were all willing. But you know how looking around is, Marge. Some of the fellas stayed in Chicago. The rest went to California with Nat. They went from nightclub to nightclub and from one hotel to another looking for bookings. Until one by one the boys got discouraged and began to drift back to Chicago.
I guess this is where I get off, Nat.
You're not staying?
Well, I can't. I'd like to, but I can't. How long will it take for our kind of music to catch on, Nat? We've been brought up to play sharp, hard jazz. Kind of makes you jump, not sigh.
Well, they'll go for the way we play. All we've got to do is play it often enough.
Nat, now, a porter on the Santa Fe got me 2 tickets back home. Want one of them?
Well,
Nat, you don't have to use them now. Later, if you want to.
Yeah. There's a hotel manager who said he'd give me an audition.
No, I'm sorry, Nat. I can't stay and help you. I'm catching the AM out. See you in Chicago, man.
See you, Sax.
Well, Marge, there Nat Cole was, all alone in California. Sax was his childhood buddy, and he stuck to the last. But when Sax caught the Santa Fe, only one man in the teenage band was left. Nat Cole. And he ate just one sandwich a day, Marge. Lost 30 pounds. And went from one club to another and played his own kind of jazz. While the club managers listened.
That'll be enough, Cole. That'll be enough.
Well, there's more to it.
And not for us. You see, your music's not sentimental enough. There's no moons and junes in it. It's so sharp, unsentimental.
Well, that's the way jazz is.
And that's why you're losing weight.
All right. Thanks, anyway.
Oh, say, just a minute.
Yeah?
Of course, if you had a couple more men with you, maybe I could use you. I need a low-price group to fill in when my big band's in intermission. Maybe I can get some of those wrinkles out of your stomach. See you in the evening.
Nat searched the town and found guitarist Oscar Moore and bass fiddler Wesley Prince and took them back to the clubhouse. They gathered around a table in the rehearsal room.
Now, dig this. The man out there doesn't think a small combination can entertain like a big band. I think he's wrong. When we get inside, play like you were playing for the $1 million prize. I'll show you my style. It's a jazz style. If you got a good beat and a good melody sense, you won't have any trouble with it. If we can put it all together, we'll have a team. They'll forget the big bands.
They got together and worked over some songs, and when opening came, they were ready. They played through number after number that same fiery rhythm he'd learned in Chicago, and the patrons listened. That's the way it was for 30 nights. And on the 31st, the manager complained.
There's something wrong with you guys, and I can't figure it out. You know more music than 50 side men, but somehow the people don't break their necks over you.
I've noticed that.
Tell you what, maybe you need a catch name. You know, like a brand of beer or something. Say, your name's Cole, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, then how about making it King Cole? Yeah. King Cole and his Fiddler's Three. The King Cole Trail, that's it. Well, now you're all set. See what that billing will bring you.
They played under the new name, and the applause was just the same. Until one old woman came into the club, heard the music, and said,
"Manager! Manager! I want the manager."
Is something wrong, madam? Isn't the service all right?
Oh, the devil with the service. I came here to hear singing.
Oh, well, you just happened to hit the wrong nightclub, madam. You see, we don't have...
What's wrong with the piano player's voice?
King Cole?
King Cole, a hut, whatever you call him, have him sing.
Well, it's this way, madam. He plays the piano, but he doesn't sing.
If he plays the piano, he can sing. My grandfather was the same way. Why, he played the piano for 17 years until someone stole it from him and forced him to sing. And that was the day of his deliverance.
I know, madam. Now, if there's anything else I can
You're
do for you...
You're not going to have him sing?
Madam, please.
That's all I wanted to know. Good day to you, sir.
Ma'am, are you the one who wanted to hear singing?
I tried to tell her, Nat, that you didn't sing.
Yeah.
It's enough to play the piano the way you do.
Young man, did you ever hear Sweet Lorraine?
Sure.
I want someone to sing it for me now. Will you?
Well, sure. Sure, ma'am. You just sit back down.
The piano player consulted with the fiddler and the guitarist, then got off on Sweet Lorraine.
Now when it's raining, I don't miss the sun. Because it's in my baby's smile. And to think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry Sweet Lorraine.
That night, Nat Cole walked out of the club with applause ringing in his ears, louder than he'd ever heard it before. He couldn't figure it, though. Nobody ever liked his singing, but people kept applauding, and Nat kept on worrying, wondering why. And when he left one club and went to another, he'd play his wizard-like piano tunes, and they'd applaud. But then he'd lean over and sing out softly.
When I'm alone with all that won't come true, what'll I do?
It was something Nat couldn't explain, Marge. I kept telling George how he went from club to club and how the pay was getting better, and Nat started making up songs. Songs he'd put together from old jokes and old phrases.
You see, the song came from a joke my father used to give in Sunday school.
Yes, go on.
Well, I made a song out of it. Thought you might want to, well, handle it, you know.
Let's hear it.
Okay, boy.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Fly right.
You expect me to buy that?
Well, I'd hoped.
And for how much?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a little short now. I'd give it to you for, say, $50. Is that too much, huh?
Yeah, it's robbery, sheer robbery.
50?
Well, just because you're broke, I'll do it. For no other reason. Here, sign this.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
And you know how much we played that in the jukeboxes, Marge. Yeah, I told George. Well, at the end of the year, the piano player came back to the buyer.
Say, that song of mine's selling everywhere.
You said it. 25,000 copies in June, 50,000 in July, and we'll hit 1 million next week. Congratulations. Congratulations, son. That was a fine song.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could, give me some of the royalties off of it.
Royalties? For my song?
I wrote it.
I bought it. You got your $50 cash. What more do you want, son? I see what you mean. You didn't know it hit. Well, one never knows. Just one of those things. You'll learn.
Nat went on singing. Oh, you know, Marge, how we went for his records. I kept telling George there was something in it. Songwriters were on Nat's doorstep trying to get him to sing their songs, and he was winning one award after another. Downbeat, Esquire, Metronome. And then this character comes into his studio one day.
Say, Nat, there's a guy outside to see you. He left his music for you. Says it's written specially for you.
Yeah?
Yeah. You should have seen the guy. He had a beard like Moses and a gown like an Arab. Wonder what the song's like.
Well, let's see.
Yeah?
Nice.
Hey, you want to try it? We got 15 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Cancel out that other song. Come around, guys. Get a good look at this one.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy.
It made everybody listen, Marge. Well, George kept asking, is that all I see in this crooner? Is that all he amounts to? And then I told him about his Hollywood home and who visited him right after he bought it.
Yes?
Is the young man who bought this house at home, Nathaniel Cole?
I'm Cole.
I see. We're from the Hollywood Improvement Association. Our committee sent you a letter, I believe.
Oh, I see. Come in.
No, thank you. We will make it short, Mr. Cole. We know you're a busy man, so are we. But you bought this property against the wishes of your neighbors.
I didn't hear any objections.
There were plenty. In fact, there's a restrictive covenant that covers this entire community. We don't take in Negroes, Jews, Mexicans, or Orientals. You bought this property, however, and we're willing to give you back your money if you move out.
And suppose I don't care to move out?
That would force us to take the matter up in court. You wouldn't want that.
I wouldn't fear that. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Oh, now, see here. Let's settle this thing in a business-like way. How much are you willing to sell for? Say, 10%? Good profit.
I'm not selling, gentlemen.
15%. 20? Why don't you sell?
Every man must have the right to live and buy property wherever he's able. I believe to sell out to people who want to kill that right is treason. I'm not selling.
When I told George about that, he started getting interested. Well, it was about time to go to the dance, Marge. You know, King Cole and the trio were playing at the Kansas City Auditorium. Well, I put my last nickel in the jukebox just to warm up, and we went over to hear him in person. It looked like everybody in Kansas City was heading there. We hurried around the corner to the box office, and then we saw something. Somebody had a picket line across the main entrance to the auditorium. The pickets were carrying signs that said, "This dance is for whites only. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is protesting against segregation in Kansas City. If you believe in the end of segregation, don't cross this picket line." That's what the sign said. I stood still for a minute, half wanting to cross on account of I did want to hear King Cole. Then, all of a sudden, there he was. I saw him. He was standing on the curb looking at the picket line, and then at the people going in. A man going into dance recognized him, too.
Say, you're King Cole, aren't you?
That's me, all right.
Well, isn't it late for you to be standing out here?
No, there's not going to be any dance. Not to my music.
No dance?
Not as long as there's a picket line. I didn't know they segregated dancers in Kansas City. I've been segregated in a lot of places myself. I've played in hotels I couldn't sleep in clubs I wasn't allowed to eat in. That isn't right. These songs I sing and play come to me from all kinds of people. My style comes from my own people. But when I play, I don't play just for my people alone. It's for all people. So this is one dance I'll stay out of. When it's open for everybody, I'll be glad to play.
It made the man think, Marge. You could see it did. He shook hands with Nat, and they went off in the crowd with the people still pouring into the auditorium. George was standing stock still, his eyes glued on the spot in the crowd where Nat Cole disappeared. And that's when it happened. George said there was more to making music than you actually hear, Marge, and that fan clubs can mean more than just a bunch of kids dancing to groovy music. So he joined. And you know something, Marge? He's right.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Kansas City Phone Call, the story of pianist-composer King Cole of the famous King Cole Trio. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of John Collin.
Yes, that was Kansas City Phone Call, an original air date of the 2nd of July, 1950. Again, Destination Freedom was an all-African-American radio troupe out of Chicago. My apologies for not clarifying that before I started the set on WMAQ in Chicago. I believe in its original inception. Well, it premiered on the 27th of June, 1948, and was a sustained show originally. That being said, I have a programming note for the grand hour. We'll be moving to the 5 o'clock hour on the 3rd of July, and from 5 to 6. Let me just fulfill an FCC obligation here. Don't drink and drive. If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. People die that way. Public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. For the second part of my show today, I'm going to play another Destination Freedom. Today is the 19th of June, which is also Emancipation Day and or Juneteenth. That being said, this one is episode 45, another Kansas City connection, the Ballad of Satchel Paige, who pitched for the Monarchs of the Negro Leagues for several years. Didn't realize Nat Coles actually could have played baseball. That's what Destination Freedom did at the historical dramas, recreating the stories about prominent African Americans. And just, I believe there was some regular fiction in there in the beginning. Again, this is Arthur, the Grand Hour, here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic heritage of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. When the story of America's national sport is written, there has got to be in it one chapter from the fabulous career of the world champion Cleveland Indians pitching ace Satchel Paige. Today, Destination Freedom will play that chapter entitled The Ballad of Satchel Paige.
Nobody knows when he first played on a baseball field. Some say he put out Caesar when old Julius tried to steal. Some say he learned about curves watching Antony's Cleopatra. But it ain't no truth in the story that Methuselah was his catcher. Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel Paige, nobody dared to bother about his age, 'cause he was the best pitcher that the good Lord ever made.
Case history of the legend starts this way. Mobile, a kid named Leroy Paige, roamed like a tumbleweed through the streets. Pitched bricks or tin cans on back fences when he played hooky from Oakdale High back near the bay. Struck out scrawny kids in sandlot ball games. Built a pitching arm and played against pro players who strayed down to the rough south side of town and sent them scurrying off with wild tales of a kid who had a baseball trained like a hawk. It could tear the heart out of home plate. Stood 6'3" in his stocking feet. Could bend back like bamboo. Could dust ash off a smoker cigar with a brick at 60 feet. And when he was 16 summers old, he heard about a baseball team in Chattanooga that was open to Negro ball players. And one hot day, he pointed his long, lean, size 14s toward Tennessee. And he went a-treading over Lookout Mountain, down toward the ballpark in the valley. Tales went a-spreading ahead of him.
Over Lookout Mountain, his feet were a-treading, and ahead of his feet, the tales started spreading about a pitching man, over 6 foot tall, who had learned how to throw the atomic ball. To Chattanooga town went Satchel the Gangling. To Lookout Park was where he was the angling. Now the baseball boss, whose name was Bailey, had heard their tales and he argued daily with his coach Sam that they were not true. But the coach just grinned. There was something he knew. And he turned to Boss Bailey, about to say something sage, when over the mountain trod Big Satchel Paige.
They say that's the way he come down on that Chattanooga ballpark. He walked on the field, walked around the field, walked across the field and stopped in front of Boss Bailey.
Hey, Coach.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bailey.
Who's this scarecrow?
Oh, well, he comes from a little scrub team in Alabama. His name's Paige. He pitches.
These hicks have more famous stories about ballplayers than the law allows. Don't know baseball from a sweet potato. Hey, you.
Paige is the name. Leroy Paige.
And what might be your profession?
I'm a pitcher, like you said.
I need a pitcher, but you ain't the one.
Well, I can catch him bat.
The only catcher bat I'd ever hire would be Josh Gibson. You Josh Gibson?
No, sir.
Well, who recommended you anyhow?
Oh, folks around home, mostly. I got the surprising kind of pitching, they say.
Look, kid. Look, professional baseball ain't no game for you. I know you grew up reading about Casey at the bat instead of your rightful nursery rhymes. Right now, you ain't even a decent juvenile delinquent. Now, blow.
I'd sure like to help your team.
Best way is to get a job on our rivals' team. Now, beat it.
Just a minute, Mr. Bailey.
Yeah?
Well, I own a part of the stock of this team, too.
What are you getting at?
Well, they say this kid here can pitch.
You say that to say what?
I'll bet you my share of the team's stock against yours. He'll do all right in a tryout.
Oh, soft-hearted, soft-headed coach. If you take stock in tall tales, I shouldn't mind taking over your stock in the team. All right, Sage or Cage or whatever they call you, grab a glove, go to the bullpen and warm up.
Don't need no warming, mister. I stay hot.
Oh, don't even know the physiology of the game. Well, see if you can find your way out on the mound.
All right, sir. I'll do my best.
Hey, coach, tell all the players to knock off and stand around. I'm going to see that this hick gets his fill of baseball. Get me Hank.
Sure, sure, Chief. Hey, Hank. Hey, home run, Hank. The boss wants you.
What's pitching, boss?
That screwball on the mound there wants to give somebody batting practice. Oblige him, will you?
I'll shoot line drive straight at his head, boss.
No, you just play with him somewhat. Give the team a little relaxation.
Sure, boss. I know just what he needs.
Yeah, that hick needs a pitching good fit. Give it to him.
Go give that hick a pitching good fit with that old boss man's cry. Knock that pitcher out of his box and I'll laugh until I die. The coach went down in the dugout and he dug up the team's best catcher. Then just for safety first, he measured Satch and got a stretcher. But not young Satch, no, he stood out on the mound with one arm on his hip and the other dangling down near the ground. and the ball players laughing like they had themselves a fit, while the catcher put on his guard and grabbed his catcher's mitt.
Hey, come on, pitch up, quick song.
Come on, pitch up, I'll show you why they call me Home Run Hank.
The umpire bent way back, just like a stick of bamboo. Why, he looked like a hairpin or a standing horseshoe. One long foot kicked a hole in the sky, the other held the ground. Then he must have pitched that blazing ball, cause there was a whistling sound.
Hey, what happened?
I didn't see that.
The bamboo stick had straightened up, and it stood still and surveyed the damage. They say the bat had been knocked down by the breeze, and the catcher was stone cold from the impact of the ball.
All right, stop standing around with your chips loose. Ooh, one of these here sudden Tennessee cyclones just passed us off. Now, have that catcher up on his feet, guys. Hey, now, kid, pitch, and don't wait for freak windblast to help you.
They helped the stricken batter and give him a gentle shove. Got another catcher, put a pillow in his glove. Then young Satch went right back to the mound. He bent way, way back and brought the ball up from the ground.
Hey, it happened again. The catcher knocked out Cole again.
Better knocked out by the breeze.
Yeah, there's a cyclone around here. The weatherman should have warned us.
It wasn't no wind, Mr. Bailey.
Well, then he's got a cannon in his pocket.
He ain't even got a slingshot. This kid, they say, ain't human.
Every human's human.
Yeah, but we...
Set up another batter and catcher. We'll try one more time.
They set up the batters like 10 pins in a bowling alley. And he struck them down till the sun went down over Lookout Mountain. And the coach knew he'd won a team and had a player with the power of 22 men who could pitch like he wasn't quite exactly human. The players crowded around the wily old coach and told the catcher to analyze the pitch.
The coach says that me and you're going to work together, Mr. Page.
Yeah, yeah, we'll be working with you from now on, Mr. Page.
Just call me Satchel, boys.
Well, what I was seeing here is your catcher. We've got to get to understand each other.
Sure.
A pitcher and a catcher's got to go along like a doctor and a nurse. Got to understand each other's signals.
Yes.
Now, if you don't mind telling me, seeing as I don't want your trade secrets, you understand, just want to know what I'm entitled to know.
Why, sure.
Then tell me, what kinds of ball do you pitch?
What kind?
Like say, some pitchers got, a curveball, a knuckleball, a jump ball, drop ball, bean ball, you see? Now, give me a list of the kind of balls you'll be pitching so as I can learn how to signal for them.
Well, I'll tell you about the balls I throw.
Yeah.
One is fast.
Yeah.
The other is faster.
Well, the catcher, he looked up and he heard old Satchel say, maybe someday when I'm old and gray, there'll be other balls that I'll have to master. Now all I need is one that's fast and another one that's faster. He didn't have no curve and he didn't have no drop, just one blazing ball that the batter couldn't stop. Oh, Satchel, yes, oh, Satchel Paige, built to pitch in the atomic age. Lean as a greyhound and as tall as a tree, he was the pitcher of history. Oh, Satchel, Satchel Paige.
They say they put him on that Tennessee team, put a uniform on his back, nailed spikes onto his 14s, and sent him pitching round the Southern Circuit. Umpires in New Orleans, Memphis, Houston, Birmingham, Atlanta, Jackson, Tallahassee, Macon watched his blazing pitches and put out their reports.
Strike three, batter's out!
Strike three, batter's out!
They say he had them all singing the same tune, week in and week out, year in and year out. And they put up a poster that said,
Satchel Paige is pitching here tonight.
Batters beware, hitters hide. Batters beware, hitters hide. Batters beware.
And people would come from miles around just to see him pitch. And he moved from team to team till he hit the town of Pittsburgh. And a guy named Gus Greenlee saw the gold dust dripping off his long, willowy right arm and called him in and asked him to sign a mighty odd contract.
You pitch your arm off in that southern circuit, never get nowhere. I got a proposition.
Yeah, what's your pitch?
Now, my team, the Pittsburgh Crawfords, lost the best batter in the country, Josh Gibson.
Josh Gibson?
Yeah, gone with the Homestead Grays. Oh. I need you because you pitch like he bats. Now, nobody ever seen you banged out of the box. With the kind of rep you're building up, you'll draw $100,000 a year.
Kind of like to meet this guy, Gibson.
Yeah, my advice. When you see him at bat, let some other sucker pitch. Now, you've been winning 49 out of 50 games. That proves you ain't human. Once you meet Josh...
I've never met a batter who couldn't strike out. Sooner or later.
If I have anything to say about it, you'll never meet this one. Play it safe. Let's barnstorm right.
He barnstormed all around the country with Josh Gibson on his mind. He went a-mowing down batters like on an assembly line.
He frisked the lineups of 40 teams in 40 days, pitched shutouts, and in one game struck out 23 men, wept because the other four fouled out. Then they say young Satch went into Chicago to play a hot series game, and his manager stopped him in the dugout.
Satch?
Yeah?
The team we're playing's imported a special batter.
Yeah? Hope I don't hurt his feelings by striking him out.
I hope he don't hurt your reputation. That reputation's worth $100,000 a year to me. I can't afford to have it hurt.
Me neither. That's why I strike him out.
That special batter's Josh Gibson.
I've been waiting for him a long time.
They write songs about his hitting like they write songs about your pitching. You stay in the dugout. I'll put in a sub. I can't spoil your record.
What about his?
Yours is worth more.
Look, I never duck no batter. I ain't ducking this one. Let me loosen my arm up on this kind of hitter. I'll learn more.
I ain't letting you pitch this game.
It's either this game or no game.
All right. Go to the slaughter, little lamb.
He walked out on the field, headed toward the mound. Looked up in the bleachers, there was everyone in town. Why, the fans hung off the rafters, and the fans stood on the roof to see was Sage or Gibson best. See the naked proof. Josh Gibson, he was good, and he swung a heavy bat. And when he hit that ball, oh child, it wasn't no loving pat. Old Satchel, he leaned back to give the folks a show. And then he straightened up and let his lightning go.
Strike one!
Oh, Josh adjusted his cap, and he let out a long, long sigh as he watched that well-trained ball go zooming by. Satch wound up again to deliver another blow. Then something happened that hadn't happened before. Josh hit the ball, and you could hear it sing. Shot over the wall, just like it had some wings. Oh, Josh just went and crawled around the park, 'cause they knew they wouldn't find that ball till way, way after dark.
They say the long shutout record of the Satchel stopped. And the manager, who'd never quite believe young Satch was human, called him aside and said,
"You ain't the phenomenon I've been advertising. How you explain it?"
"Well, it just proves that I'm human."
They say the next time he pitched to old Josh Gibson, it was in a park in Chicago. He let three men get on base just to get to Killer Gibson. When he came up to the plate, Satch called out to him,
"Hey, Josh!
Hey, Satch!
I'm striking you out with three straight balls!
Ain't no man that's human can do that to me.
The first one will be fast.
Strike one!
The next one's fast.
Strike two!
This one's faster.
Strike
Bedlam broke out in the boxes like measles. The crowd threw so many straw hats out on the field, it took 20 attendants 2 hours to clear them away. 10 cops beat back the congratulators. 2 doctors fixed Satch's hand bones he'd broke through handshaking. And he went traveling on and pitched against the big league batters in all-star games. He caught Hack Wilson in Pasadena, struck him out 6 times straight. In Chicago, he sought out Babe Herman. The Babe never got to first base. Ted Williams swung out like a blind man in Brooklyn. He cut down Lloyd Wehner in Pittsburgh and struck out Joe DiMaggio in San Diego, dueled with Dizzy Dean up and down the West Coast, and took him 11 games out of 12. Picked out a kid named Bob Feller in Iowa, taught him every trick in the trade, and sent him up to the majors. And one pre-war year, Satchel knocked at the gates of the major leagues. But the scout shook a sad head.
If you would have been with the Cubs, the Sox, the Senators, you could have won many a pennant for them. And some of them teams ain't seen no part of a pennant in years. But they still won't take you. People keep pushing against the Jim Crow door. It'll crack wide open one of these days. I hope you'll still be around.
The scouts kept a-coming. The scouts kept a-scouting. Not a single one, not a single one was doubting. Into the major leagues, old Satch would go. Once they got rid of that guy called Jim Crow.
And he kept traveling the circuit of the Negro League. Played with the Baltimore Black Barons, the Cleveland Brown Bears, Nashville Elite Giants, and the Kansas City Monarchs. Got so good, the touts followed him around the country and gave guarantees that sounded like fables.
The great batting page is sitting inside this bar, folks. I'll bet you 4-1 he's a guarantee to strike out the first 3 batters.
First 3?
That's right.
And he looked back over his shoulder. See that the first inning was over, and the 3 batters had already swung out like rusty.
My apologies. We're running out of time here on the grand hour. I just had a few miscues this morning because they moved my show time to 5. I had to figure out how to set it up. Interestingly enough, I'm subbing for my own show today, and I had to figure out how to do that. So I was a little delayed. But again, you were listening to The Ballad of Satchel Paige, part of the Destination Freedom program. That was episode 45, with an original air date of the 15th of May, 1949. That was featured on WMAQ in Chicago, created and written by Richard Durham, and it featured an all African American cast troupe for playing those double billing of Destination Freedoms today, because it's the 19th of June. The New England calendars call it Emancipation Day. In Texas, we called it Juneteenth. That being said, thanks for listening. I will be on the air next week at 5 a.m., but I plan on a 2-hour show, so I will play through to 7, kind of blending my new show time that'll start on the 3rd into the old one. 6-7 slot. This is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to have to turn things over. I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to turn things over to automation. Don't believe Matt will be in today for the whirlpool.